Thank you all for coming this afternoon, and that was a great lead-in because I am going to be talking about preventing vaccine storage and handling errors. Obviously, we all believe in prevention when it comes to disease, and it is also best to prevent errors and not have them happen. I had some handouts in the back. I know that I did not have enough for everyone in this room, so feel free to email me, and obviously this will be posted on CDC's website too. And I have many links in the resources to good resources for you, so I want you to be able to have access to those. Because I will admit, I have never stored or handled any vaccines myself, but I am the person who answers the email that comes in to the Immunization Action Coalition. And we have many people writing every day with all kinds of medical errors, and many of them refer to storage and handling. And I'm going to be providing some of those examples without names as I go along. And thank you to Donna and Patricia from CDC for much of the information that we have here. And I'm going to skip through some of these because Joellen has already set the stage very well about how fragile vaccines are and how important this is. But I do want to reiterate that it's better to not vaccinate at all than to use a compromised dose or to a dose that has been expired or is the wrong vaccine. Because, as Joellen pointed out, you are probably going to lose money. You're certainly going to lose confidence. The media might find out, or your patients may just be unknowingly susceptible to serious diseases. And again, we have many parents that write us, too, that about things that happened, that they know they were told they got a dose of expired vaccine or their child did, and they are not happy campers when they have to get another dose. This presentation is going to cover three basic categories. First of all, developing comprehensive written guidelines and how to store vaccine correctly, and then about handling vaccines. First of all, it's important to develop written guidelines for both standard and emergency vaccine storage and handling procedures, to assign and train primary and backup managers, and then to make sure that all staff are familiar with your practices, policies, and procedures. And this should include janitorial, security, reception, and mail staff. All too often, people are not aware that, for example, there's been a power outage or a janitor may unplug the refrigerator to vacuum. We just had somebody call our organization last week to say that they just discovered they had a large package of vaccines sitting on the shipping dock for a week. So you need security, reception, a mail, everybody on your staff to be familiar with these procedures. The IOM released a report in 1999 about medical errors, and they determined that most of the time it was medical errors were not the result of one bad apple or carelessness, that it was a system fault, and that we want to make our system so that they are safer, and I like this quote, to make it harder for people to do something wrong and easier for them to do it right. And I just have an example of a do not unplug sticker there, that it makes these simple things can make it easier to do the right thing. So we said we need to develop written vaccine storage and handling guidelines for both standard and emergency situations, and this will ensure that everyone is on the same figurative and literal page. And this is a long list, and I am mentioning CDC's vaccine storage and handling toolkit many times. Unfortunately, they are in the process of revising it and is offline, but it will be online again soon, and all of this information is in there. And I, at the end, I will give a link about how to find out when it is back online. But this is just a sample checklist from CDC of things to include in your routine vaccine storage and handling plan, such as up-to-date contact information for your people in your clinic and for your local health department, for vaccine manufacturers, your freezer and refrigerator maintenance people, descriptions of the roles of the managers, the summary of the storage requirements for each vaccine, and again, I have a resource for that. You also can use the package inserts. Protocols for how you're going to monitor the temperatures of your units, the storage maintenance equipment for your equipment, how you're going to have inventory management, protocols for the correct placement of vaccines within your units, for responding to vaccine storage and handling problems. We're going to go into a lot of these in a little more detail. For receiving vaccine shipments, protocols for transferring vaccine off-site, for preparing after you've removed the vaccine from the unit and for disposal of vaccine containers and supplies, and also all the samples of the forms used in your vaccination program. You also need an emergency plan for vaccine retrieval and storage in case of equipment failures, power outages, or natural disasters. And it's always best if you can possibly plan in advance if you know there's going to be construction or there's going to be a tornado, and retrieve your vaccine and store it somewhere else before the fact. Every clinic, as I said, should have this plan in writing, and you should have a backup source where you can store your vaccines, a place where they have a backup generator. You can check with your state health department. It might be a local hospital. And you also need plans for getting into your facility. Again, this has to do with security and how you're going to transport the vaccine after hours and such. Again, there's a lot more information in CDC's toolkit about this. I also said that you need a vaccine storage and handling manager and a backup person. Both should be trained and be familiar with all these aspects of storage and handling that we are talking about. The second major category was about vaccine storage, and I'm going to go through each of these points, so I'm not going to read them now. We'll just go through them one by one. The first is use the right kind of storage unit. And research has been showing that stand-alone refrigerators and stand-alone freezers are best at maintaining the required temperatures. A combination unit is still acceptable, but not optimal, if the freezer and refrigerator have separate external doors. What is not acceptable for storage of vaccines is, for long-term, is single like dorm refrigerators or bar refrigerators that only have one door, that these will not keep consistent temperatures, and we'll go into that more if you have questions later. Secondly, to store all vaccine appropriately in the refrigerator or the freezer, and MMRV, zoster, and varicella need to be in the freezer. MMR can be in either, and the other vaccines need to be refrigerated and not frozen. Third, place vaccines in the most temperature-stable area of your unit. Now, this is a refrigerator. This particular picture is a resource from the Easy Izy program in California, which is their VFC program, and they have some wonderful resources. And you can see this is a standalone, so there's a little more room inside because you're not dealing with a freezer vent there. But it's important to see that you don't store, you're supposed to store vaccines toward the middle of your unit, not in the doors, not in the bottom. You can see they've removed like vegetable trays in the bottom, and you can store containers of water to stabilize your temperature in those areas and keep things labeled and keep them in the original packaging. This is a refrigerator setup that is a combination unit but with two separate doors, but you can see the space is more limited, that you have to avoid the space on the top there where the cold air is coming down from the freezer, and still you can't put vaccine in the doors or in the bottom, and still here everything is nicely labeled. Here's a separate freezer setup, different kinds, and again you want to use the most temperature stable areas, more in the middle of the units. Again, keep things in the original packaging and stabilize the temperature with frozen packs or ice trays stored along the walls, back, and insides of the racks. The fourth point for storage is not to store anything else in the refrigerator. This is especially true for staff lunches and beverages and such. You don't want to restore food because you're going to be opening the door all the time, and that's going to adversely affect your temperature of the unit. Other medications, if you store them in there, you can have mix-ups, overpacking, contamination, and again, you might be opening the door more. We have had letters sent to us about mix-up of biological products, such as giving influenza vaccine intradermally, thinking it's a PPD solution and such. So not the kind of thing you want to have to explain. And I'm not going to talk much about thermometers because we have this expert down there. But we are. The fifth point is use only a calibrated thermometer with a certificate of traceability and calibration. And this is to make sure that your thermometer conforms to international standards. Don't use simple household thermometers, are not accurate enough. And the thermometer should be placed in the same place where you're placing your vaccines, basically in the middle of the unit. And we're going to hear more about this in the third presentation about the different kinds of thermometers that are available. Sixth, monitor and record your refrigerator and freezer temperatures at least twice a day. We are learning more and more that this is really not adequate, that we can have temperature excursions that we don't know about if we're not continually monitoring them. And but this is what at this point is legally required. Maintaining the acceptable temperatures for the refrigerator should be between 35 and 46 degrees Fahrenheit. It's best to set it at mid-range so you have a margin of safety. The freezer compartment should maintain a temperature of 5 degrees Fahrenheit or colder. It's best to only have the primary or backup vaccine storage and handling manager adjust the thermostat so you don't have too many cooks in there spoiling the broth. And monitor the temperature in a new or repaired unit for a week before using it for vaccine storage. It's important also to take immediate range action for out-of-range temperatures. And I'm sure we've all heard these stories about people going ahead and marking the wrong temperature down and not noticing it. And we've gotten letters. You don't want to be like the practice that wrote that their temperatures had been out of range for an extended period of time, and they'd had a whole batch of two-year-olds who'd gotten four DTAPs, all of which had been compromised. So if you have something like this where you either have to write in the number if it's out of range or if it's in red, it makes it, again, easier to do the right thing and harder to do the wrong thing. We're advised to maintain your temperature logs for at least 3 years. Your institution or state may require a longer period of time. And this is for your own benefit, too, because you can track recurring problems with your units. And you can lobby for a new refrigerator or freezer if things are not going well, and you can determine how long a problem has been happening. And my ninth point under storage was just to take as many preventive simple measures as you can about using plug guards, warning signs on circuit breakers and such, so it's hard to do the wrong thing and everybody knows what is the right thing to do. The last section is about vaccine handling, and we do get a lot of letters about mixed-up vaccines and diluents and such, and this is kind of like after how you store the vaccines in the unit and after you take them out. So it's important to develop inventory management protocols, to rotate your stock, to use up the older vaccine first and never use expired vaccines, to store vaccines and diluents in a way that will best avoid mix-ups, keep vaccines in their boxes until ready to use, only open one vial at a time, label the vaccine somehow once they're drawn into a syringe. Use them quickly, especially reconstituted vaccines have a time limit, and don't pre-fill syringes except in limited situations. Your inventory management protocols will both avoid errors and will help you save money because your manager should know what quantities of vaccines and diluents have been received, which are currently in stock. Which should be used first. If any have been expired, they should be taken out. And they should keep track all the time of what quantities have been administered, wasted, or spoiled. How many are in excess supply that could possibly be returned for credit, and which vaccines and diluents need to be ordered. As I said, we get many letters from parents, too, about expired vaccines being given, and nobody is happy in these situations. CDC basically recommends that you order just enough vaccine to meet the needs of your patients, typically enough to last 60 days. If you over-order vaccine, of course, you're more likely to have them expire, and you also can risk losing a large quantity more than you needed to if you have some kind of accident. And it also minimizes if you order vaccines together, minimizes the number of shipments you have to worry about the cold chain and handling. Under-ordering can also be a problem if you don't have a vaccine in stock and you miss opportunities. So the general guide is to order vaccine in accordance with actual vaccine need. And so if you're keeping track of this, you should know after a while. Always use your older vaccine first and check the expiration date. If it has a specific date, if it just has a month and year, you can use it through the last day of that month, as you see on the second example there. However, vaccine 1 day over the expiration date is not valid. And this is really dear to my heart because we get so many letters about this, but to store your vaccines and diluents to avoid mix-ups. Many of them have similar packaging or names, such as DTAP or DTAP, Adacel, Adaptacel, or have similar-looking packaging. Or there are child and adult dosages, like hepatitis B and hepatitis A vaccine. And people are writing us all the time about such mix-ups for themselves or their children or their patients. So make sure that these are stored in the best way and labeled on different shelves, and make clear which diluents go with which vaccines. Keep your VFC and privately purchased vaccines separated and labeled, and keep them in their original packaging in some kind of bins or baskets and clearly labeled to avoid confusion. This is another resource from the California VFC program, helping people do the right thing and know the difference between Tdap and DTaP products. Once you've gotten the vaccine out of the unit, you still have a responsibility to handle it correctly, keep it straight, identify the syringe somehow with a sticky or put it in a labeled partition tray. We had one email about a practice where two adolescent sisters were each supposed to get a dose of varicella and meningococcal vaccine, and instead one sister got two varicella and one sister got two meningococcal. So, and pre-filling syringes, we get many questions about, especially in influenza season, and it is possible to do in limited quantities. I have some information here, and it's also in CDC's toolkit. And should only be if it is used for in use of a single vaccine, such as an influenza clinic, and you should not draw more than 10 doses or one vial, whichever is greater, into syringes at a time. And we've gotten letters about people drawing a week ahead of time and such. So you don't need to be that organized. I'd like to finish with some storage and handling resources, and again, please feel free to email me, and I'll give you my card if you come up. These are storage and handling resources from our Immunization Action Coalition, and one of them, the one at the bottom there, the Emergency Response Worksheet, is a really good one for if you have a problem, what you should record and report afterwards. And there's going to be a workshop at 4 o'clock specifically about if you haven't prevented your problem, what to do afterwards. Some more storage and handling resources from us. And this is a guide from CDC about every vaccine and what the exact storage requirements are. Again, you can get this information from the package inserts, too, for ones that are newer vaccines and not included here. The storage and handling toolkit, which we all love so much, will hopefully be back online soon. And a little shout-out to us here. If you subscribe to IAC Express, we will inform you immediately as soon as it's back online, as well as give you other great information. The Easy Izy program in California, I have a link to it there. It's easyizy.org. They have some great resources about choosing units and cleaning them and storing things in them. Just keep in mind that some of the specific information there may be specific to California, but there's a lot of good resources they have developed. And if you need more help, I would suggest you first contact your state immunization manager. Secondly, the vaccine manufacturer. There's NIP info to reach CDC experts, and IAC, that would be reaching me at admin@immunize.org. Thank you very much.